The U.S. Justice Department sued Texas last week, saying the state's ban on abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy was in open defiance of the U.S. Constitution. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the suit on Thursday, pointing to part of the law that empowers private citizens in the state to sue anyone who helps a woman end a pregnancy after the sixth week.
The obvious and expressly acknowledged intention of this statutory scheme is to prevent women from exercising their constitutional rights by thwarting judicial review for as long as possible. Thus far, the law has had its intended effect.
But some legal experts say the federal government is itself relying on a new legal strategy that may make its case against Texas pretty hard to pull off. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the federal government should be taking action against the Texas abortion ban? Do you want to see laws like the one in Texas be used in other states across the country, maybe here in Wisconsin? Or are you worried about the idea that similar laws, especially those that rely on individual enforcement in effect, could crop up elsewhere? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kimmy King is chair and distinguished teaching professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of North Texas in Denton. Kimmy, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back.
We heard a little bit from Attorney General Merrick Garland there. Can you talk more about their justification, the Justice Department justification for this suit against Texas?
So it really is an attempt to slow some of the momentum that you see in any number of states that have become really at the forefront of trying to halt abortion access. And it's consistent with a litigation strategy that pro-life forces have been using across the country. In fact, the Supreme Court is set to hear a case this term out of Mississippi, which restricts abortion access after 15 weeks. So what the Attorney General is trying to do is send a message that those states that are looking to enact these limitations, the federal government is going to use its legal power to try to provide protection. And it's just more of the same struggle that we've really been seeing heat up for about the last 30 years as it relates to the abortion issue.
Before we dig more into the court side of things, you've got front row seats there in Texas. What has changed in the, just a couple of weeks now since this law went into effect?
Well, one of the things that has become a real concern is that we have now what people are calling abortion refugees. You are seeing in Oklahoma, Colorado, New Mexico, Louisiana, all of the border states around Texas are scrambling to put in place additional support for women that are coming across state lines. You also have to remember in places like, especially Louisiana, as well as in Oklahoma, they have their own set of abortion restrictions and limitations because the states regulate in different ways that particular decision and have a series of laws that apply to it. And it's that patchwork of laws that is contributing to the chaos about where should women go. I mean, it's coupled with, for example, the fact that clinics also will have to close because of the hurricane and the weather situation that we also have going on down here. And with prohibiting abortions with the fetal heartbeat, and that begins around 6 weeks, they've effectively made illegal 85% of all the abortions that had been taking place in the state of Texas, which is what pro-life supporters wanted and why folks like the Attorney General, as well as pro-choice folks, have said cannot stand.
One unique part of this law that's making it function differently in the legal system, if I'm reading this right, Kimmy, is enforcement. The Texas law doesn't say that police enforce this or prosecutors or any state official. In fact, it says they don't enforce it. It's left to private citizens who would report abortion performed contrary to this law and be rewarded with money in case of a successful lawsuit. Why is that such a big wrinkle on court challenges to this law?
Well, because one of it's a great question, and it's really an innovative legal argument that one of the pro-life leaders in the state of Texas had pushed for and been successful with. And it, what it does is it takes away the ability to sue the state. And why there have been so many challenges is that states put these laws in place, they make the state responsible for enforcing it, and then you have the ability to sue over this issue involving state involvement. By making it these private actors, what if you're pro-choice, you call them vigilantes, and if you're pro-life, you call them pro-life warriors, have been allowed to do now is that if they find a doctor that is engaging in this, then they have the ability to report that person, and it removes the state from that responsibility and makes it incumbent upon being able to sue that private individual. And it's a legal technicality that the U.S. Supreme Court essentially avoided dealing with when this case was put before it on an emergency appeal.
We're talking to Kimmy King from the University of North Texas about a Justice Department, a U.S. Justice Department lawsuit against the state of Texas over its abortion law that just came into effect a couple weeks back. You can join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, I'm glad our country is actually bringing up this topic, and I think it's easy to see why this Texas law, or why the Supreme Court responded to the Texas law the way they did, because there's a difference between criminal law, a criminal act, and a civil law and a civil act. The Texas law makes this a civil situation, but I believe that a woman does not have a right to a constitutional right to an abortion because it's a criminal act to take another life. And if she thinks that this is an act of self-defense, well, she made a decision to become pregnant, or there was a criminal act involved in her non-consent. So there's the Supreme Court will rule on this based on criminal law and civil law, and I think they'll make the distinction accordingly.
Jeff, thanks for the call. A couple interesting points there. Kimmy, what do you think?
So, you know, without a doubt, the point that your caller is making is representing this divide about how we see these different issues and where responsibility is supposed to lay. In terms of how this addresses it, it in essence allows for this civil approach to being able to sue over different issues or bring this to people's attention. The difficulty becomes in trying to sort out that existing Supreme Court precedent places limitations, especially before, or I should say after the 24th week of pregnancy. There's a period between 20 to 24 weeks where states may be able to do testing to see if it's a viable fetus or a child, depending on whether you're pro-life or pro-choice. The Supreme Court has always spoken in terms of viability. And what does viability mean? It's that ability to live outside of the mother's womb or the uterus. And so that's why everyone's focusing on the doctrine of this, saying that the court is undermining its own doctrine, but it is absolutely getting at the heart of the abortion debate, which is why I think you will see more pressure that while there have been so many issues associated with this, they've all been in the courts. Your caller is picking up on this concern that it's a constant issue that's seen as a court issue, and why state legislatures or the federal legislature, you know, should be able to have the ability to intervene. It's just that in Texas's case, they've chosen to intervene on the side of pro-life. You will undoubtedly see other states be more supportive of pro-choice mechanisms.
And Jeff also mentioned he doesn't see abortion as a constitutional right for women. We heard Attorney General Garland saying this is preventing women from exercising their constitutional rights. Under Roe versus Wade and that ruling, at least that precedent, as long as it stands, is the right to abortion seen as a constitutional right until, as you mentioned, that point of viability?
Yeah, and his point is also important to note because the there isn't a single constitutional right that any one of us has that there are not limitations on. There is no constitutional right that is absolute. Free speech comes pretty close to it, but it's absolutely the case that there are limitations, and that's why you've seen the restrictions really going back to 1989. The Supreme Court started being more assertive about allowing the states to regulate. And in a case in the early 90s, they set the standard at regulation before and after viability, putting forward this idea that the court has decided there's a constitutional right. There's nothing in the Constitution that says there is a right to an abortion. There's actually nothing in the Constitution which says there's a right to privacy, which is part of what the right to an abortion is founded on. And so it's that battle over who's got the power and whose rights are these, and can these rights be restricted, which is why we're in the battle that we're in right now.
We're talking to Kimmy King, chair and professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of North Texas, with us today for a look at the Justice Department's legal challenge to a Texas law banning abortions after the sixth week of pregnancy. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your reactions to the law, to the federal Justice Department suing over the law. What are you hoping comes out of all this? What are you fearing comes out of all this? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our look at the Biden administration's legal challenge against Texas for the state's abortion ban. Kimmy King stays with us from the University of North Texas. You can join in with your reactions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hello.
Afternoon. Yeah, I'm surprised that a liberal state that controls all the levers of lawmaking hasn't put a law out there similar to this one, only against maybe an assault weapon ban. So they do an assault weapon ban, but they say, guess what? The sheriff isn't going to enforce it. You could sue these people if you know they got assault weapons. And, you know, same thing, up to minimum of $10,000. That would at least force the Supreme Court's hand, because they're going to act on that quick. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. And Kimmy, I have seen this from some conservative writers who consider themselves pro-life, but are worried about this enforcement mechanism and exactly what Jimmy was talking about. Well, what if another state does that sort of quote-unquote vigilante thing, but with, say, guns?
Oh, it's such an excellent point. And you saw even in the finding that the language literally from the opinion was regarding this application for intervention, saying that it, quote, presents a complex and novel antecedent procedural questions on which the petitioners have not carried their burden. What that means in essence is you can't figure out how to do an intervention on the law. So you allow the law to go into effect. You can't really attack it on its face. And you have to wait for a lawsuit to make it through the ranks, right, to have a full hearing with full oral arguments on the case. And it absolutely is the case. And that's why Chief Justice John Roberts, who is considered to be a conservative in days of old, he joined the liberals in this decision, and he simply made the argument that they should have granted preliminary relief just to preserve the status quo so that the courts could look at whether states can avoid their responsibility for laws in this way. And it will be the case, depending on how all of this plays out, that you are going to see folks use that. The big advantage for Texas is they get to avoid all of the legal costs associated with this. I mean, at a minimum, a case is going to run you $200,000 to $300,000 just to get the first part of the way. to say nothing of what happens if you go all the way to the Supreme Court. It's incredibly costly for states to put these laws in place. And you've seen some states say, we're going to wait and see what happens with that state in their case before we do anything. So it's absolutely a litigation strategy that people will be considering for the future.
Thanks for that call, Jimmy. We'll go now to Josie in Little Chute. Josie, hi.
Hi. I'm commenting on the caller's, the criminal end of the law where it is not allowed of rape and incest.
And what did you want to bring up, Josie, about that?
Well, at 18 years old, I was unfortunately raped. And why am I going to have to be punished for somebody else's crime? It's very vile. It's wrong.
Josie, I'm sorry you went through that, and thank you for sharing your experience.
Yeah.
Kimmy, can you talk about how that issue that Josie brings up is being talked about?
Yeah, that is a really good point. And I think that probably the clearest thing from looking at this is that they have consistently, even within conservative courts, upheld this idea that there must be some sort of rape and incest exemption if there's especially concerns about the mother's life, her maternal health. And I want to also echo the concerns that you raise. I'm sorry that you went through that. There are any number of women now who are currently facing that in Texas, and they are going to be some of the parties in these cases. So the criminal issue that I think she's trying to get at is, why is it that someone should be allowed to engage in that kind of crime, and the person who is the victim is forced to deal with it? It comes right now, today, we just had a federal judge that's been overseeing a decade-long lawsuit against Texas in its conditions for foster care. We have all kinds of problems with foster care being exposed to sexual abuse and wrong medication and neglected. And what you're going to see is that there will be additional lawsuits that come forward about these kinds of issues when children wind up being born from this era that we're already starting to see, women choosing to try to make other options rather than abortion.
Thanks again, Josie, for sharing your story and your call. Kimmy King is with us from the University of North Texas, looking at the state's abortion law and a federal Justice Department challenge to that law. Back to your calls now. David is with us in Hatfield. David, hello.
Hello. My comment is that if Texas is requiring people to carry a child to term, they should be responsible for all prenatal care to make sure that it is a healthy, viable baby. Time off for the women, child care if necessary, and any support that's necessary to raise that kid till he's 18.
David, thanks for the call. Kimmy, are those factors that have come up in Texas?
No, they haven't. And it's because Texas has long considered itself to be a low taxes, low services state. That is, we don't charge you much, but you're not going to get much either, kind of strategy. And so we consistently rank lower than where we should be, given the size of our state, for our health care resources, indeed for child care. Foster care has been a bit of a scandal here in Texas. I think you will see pushback against the Texas legislature as a result of this.
In our last little over a minute, Kimmy, what are you watching for now with this Justice Department case in Texas as it progresses through the courts?
Well, the real case people want to be watching for is the Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization. That's the Mississippi state law that has prohibited abortions after the 15th week. It's the one that really squarely sets out this issue of whether all pre-viability prohibitions on elective abortions are unconstitutional. Given that the Supreme Court went for 24 hours without saying anything on its emergency appeal, and then they decided the case on its shadow docket, is an indication of how they will rule in Dobbs, and everybody is going to be watching that case.
And do we know when they will hear and then rule on that?
Ooh, that's a really good question. It was not accepted until May 17th, so it's going to come up later in the term. This is such a hot-button issue, and there's some indication that the court's kind of reeling from the reaction that they got out of it. They will probably not decide that until the end of the term, but we will see. There may become internal pressure to do something else before then.
Kimmy, thanks as always for joining us today.
You betcha. Love public radio.
That's Kimmy King, chair and distinguished teaching professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of North Texas in Denton. She was with us today to talk about the U.S. Justice Department's lawsuit against Texas over that state's ban on abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy.